It's May 21st, 2013, Bhaktivedanta Manor, London, England, and we're doing part two of a seminar on the Bhagavatam. Yesterday we did why study the Bhagavatam, and today we're going to do how to study and how to teach. So before we do the verse for today, can somebody tell me something about yesterday? What's in the Bhagavatam? Stories and philosophy and stories and philosophies. Yes, and Prabhupada's purports, which are full of his ecstasies. And also in Prabhupada's purports, we find the previous acharyas. And then there's all the personalities in the stories, all the great personalities in the stories. What are some of the personalities in the stories? Dhruva and Prahlad. Kardama, Parikit, okay. And what do you get from studying the Bhagavatam? First, you get clean. Vidyantasa Bhadrani Vidyanoti Sritsita. The first one gets cleansed of all the upadis, all the designations, all the illusion. And then after getting cleaned, you realize your swarup. You realize your relationship with Krishna. And then as one meditates on Krishna and their relationship, they see Krishna directly, and at the end one goes back to home, back to Godhead. Cleaning the dirty things, realizing one's swarup, seeing Krishna face to face, going back to Godhead. Sound good? Okay. That's another verse of the Bhagavatam, 325:25. Satam prasango manmavirya samvido bhavanti vidkarna rasayanam kata yajyoshana tadvapavarbhavartmani shraddha ratir bhakti anukramishyati. One will go step by step. So that's what happens. Now, how do we get that? Okay. This verse is cited by Jiva Goswami as the concluding verse of the Bhagavatam. Is that okay with you? Any reactions to that? It's a bit early to be the concluding verse. After this, Sugadeva Goswami says, do you have any more questions? But this concludes the basic Bhagavatam answering Parikit's question, what to do at the time of death. So this is 2237. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Those who drink through oral reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment, and thus go back to Godhead, the lotus feet of him, the personality of Godhead. So, how are you supposed to study the Bhagavatam? Through the ears? How? Through the ears? Drinking. To what extent? Fully. Samvritam. Fully filled. And here we have this satam again, this idea of the devotees as being truthful. Purport. The sufferings of human society are due to a polluted aim of life, namely lording it over the material resources. The more human society engages in the exploitation of undeveloped material resources for sense gratification, the more it will be entrapped by the illusory material energy of the Lord, and thus the distress of the world will be intensified instead of diminished. The human necessities of life are fully supplied by the Lord in the shape of food grains, milk, fruit, wood, stone, sugar, silk, jewels, cotton, salt, water, vegetables, etc. That would make an interesting class. Insufficient quantity to feed and care for the human race of the world, as well as the living beings on each and every planet within the universe. The supply source is complete, and only a little energy by the human being is required to get his necessities into the proper channel. There is no need of machines and tools or huge steel plants for artificially creating comforts of life. Life is never made comfortable by artificial needs, but by plain living and high thinking. The highest perfectional thinking for human society is suggested here by Shukadeva Goswami, namely sufficiently hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. For men in this age of Kali, when they have lost the perfect vision of life, the Srimad Bhagavatam is a torchlight by which to see the real path. Prabhupada's referring to which verse when he says that? Yes, the verse we did yesterday. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada has commented on the Kathamritam mentioned in this verse and has indicated Srimad Bhagavatam to be the nectarian message of the personality of Godhead. By sufficient hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, the polluted aim of life, namely lording it over matter, will subside, and people in general in all parts of the world will be able to live a peaceful life of knowledge and bliss. For a pure devotee of the Lord, any topics in relation with his name, fame, quality, entourage, etc., are all pleasing. And because such topics have been approved, now this is another interesting list in this purport. So we had the interesting list of necessities, and now we're going to have this very interesting list. And because such topics have been approved by great devotees like, now listen to this list, Narada, Hanuman, Nanda Maharaj, and other inhabitants of Vrindavan. I'm not going to discuss that today, but just noting, that's an interesting list. Certainly such messages are transcendental and pleasing to the heart and soul. Prabhupada also has an interesting list in the introduction to Krishna book, a list of devotees. So here he who are the devotees mentioned here? Narada, Nandamarj, and Hanuman, and all the other residents of Vrindavan. Yeah. Narada, Hanuman, Nandamarj, and all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan. They've approved the Bhagavatam. The approval committee. And by the constant hearing of the messages of the Bhagavad Gita and later Srimad Bhagavatam, one is assured herein by Srila Sukadeva Goswami that he will reach the personality of Godhead and render him transcendental loving service in the spiritual planet of the name Goloka Vrindavana, which resembles a huge lotus flower. Thus, by the process of bhakti yoga directly accepted, as suggested in this verse, by sufficient hearing of the transcendental message of the Lord, the material contamination is directly eliminated without one's attempting to contemplate the impersonal virat conception of the Lord. And by practicing bhakti yoga, oh my, this is a heavy one. Maybe I shouldn't read the end of this purport. If you get easily discouraged, then think about something else. And by practicing bhakti yoga, if the performer is not purified by the material contamination, he must be a pseudo-devotee. For such an imposter, there is no remedy for being freed from material entanglement. Now, we won't talk about that. Okay. No, we will, but anyway. That's a pretty heavy statement, isn't it? Whenever I read that, I go, oh my God. What will I do? So how to study the Bhagavatam to get this effect of being cleansed of all material contamination, realizing one's actual identity, seeing Krishna and going back to Godhead. So one must fully drink the Bhagavatam. This is also described in 1344 as hearing with rapt attention. So there it is saying. Prabhupada says, O learned Brahmanas, when Sukadeva Goswami recited Bhagavatam there, I heard him with rapt attention, and thus by his mercy I learned the Bhagavatam from that great and powerful sage. So what does rapt mean? R-A-P-T, not W-R-A-P-P-E-D, but R-A. Full focused. Any other ideas of what the meaning of the English word rapt is? That's R-W-R-A-P-P-E-D. Concentration, yes. Very intense, exclusive, without diversion. There's an English word that's connected to the word rapt. Rapture. Oh, very good. Deeply engrossed or absorbed. Does it also mention how it's related to the word rapture?
Deeply engrossed.
Not in that little dictionary. Okay. Rapture means to be carried away, to be raptured, kind of like to be kidnapped. So, Srila Prabhupada didn't like having people do other things during Bhagavatam class. And I haven't talked about this for years and years and years and years and years, but it used to be one of my causes. So when I trained Gurukul children in attending the morning program, I never let them do anything in the class except take notes. Just listen and take notes. So whenever Prabhupada would see people doing other thing in the class, he would stop them and he would say, don't divert your attention. Don't divert your attention. So it should be rapt attention, not partial attention. In our modern society, everybody likes to give partial attention to everything. You know, while you're talking to your friend, you're answering your email and you're polishing your nails and all at the same time. Yes, this is considered the perfection of modern society, isn't it? Right? How to appear to be attentive without actually being attentive. But to hear Bhagavatam, one should be fully attentive. Now, under what circumstances are we fully attentive to something? When we like it. When we need it. And when you know you need it. If you're lost somewhere and you ask somebody for directions, you're fully attentive if you trust the person. Right? Maybe you even take notes and you repeat it over and over again. You do something to remember. So a lot of being fully attentive is to understand the importance. That's a lot of being fully attentive is to understand the importance. If we don't understand the importance of something, we're not going to be fully attentive to it. We'll be distracted. And of course, another reason to be fully attentive is to realize that the Bhagavatam is not a book. It's not just paper and ink. It's a person. It's actually Krishna himself. And all of the personalities in the Bhagavatam are there. Even in an ordinary book, as we talked about yesterday, you are associating with the personalities of that book, even if they're fictional personalities, by being absorbed in the story. That's just a medical scientific fact. It's as if you're right with, whenever you're reading a story or hearing or watching a story, it's as if you're become in the association of those characters. And how much more so is that true when we're dealing with something transcendent? So, of course, Prabhupada talks about this with chanting also. You're directly in the presence of Krishna. How attentive will you be? You know, so if Prabhupada were to come to you and say, Krishna's going to come to your room in the next 10 minutes. How attentive would you be? How focused would you be? You'd be completely focused. So the problem is that we forget this. Of course, sometimes we have this experience of complete focus, whether it's on Bhagavatam, whether it's on our japa, whether it's on kirtan, whether it's on serving the deity or any service. And you find when you have this complete focus, what happens? You lose your awareness of anything else, isn't it? I've experienced this many times on book distribution, where you forget how long you've been standing on your feet. You forget about it. You forget everything. You're just absorbed. Later you realize, oh, my feet hurt. Oh, I've been carrying a heavy bag. Yes, you've had this experience? We just had this experience in Florence, Italy. We were taken to the art studio of one devotee, Gananjana, and he has these paintings that are, if you see the entrance to Prabhupada's Vyasasan, the wooden frame there. So if you imagine a painting that could fill that whole frame. So most of his paintings are that big. Some are bigger than that. Some are taller than that. His paintings are 2 to 3 meters high, maybe 4 or 5 meters long, most of them. The smallest ones were maybe like a meter by a meter. And they're great detail and depth. Somehow he's really mastered three-dimensional painting. What's really amazing is each of his paintings takes him 2 weeks to do. Can you imagine what kind of rapt attention he must have when he's painting? And because, and we'll get to this, it's hard to separate this study and teaching, but because he's really rapt when he's painting, it's so easy when you're there to become rapt in the paintings. and you really feel that you're being raptured into the painting. And there you are with Abhimanyu being surrounded by the Maharatis. And there you are with, I mean, he's got one of little 12-year-old Kunti shading her eyes from the sun. God. And you see the whole palace and you forget everything. You forget that you're in Florence. You forget you're in a studio. You forget that you've been standing there for 2 hours and you haven't had anything to drink, and you forget all that. So we all have these sort of experiences, and this is the kind of experience we should have when we're hearing Bhagavatam, where we enter basically into real samadhi. Now, there's two kinds of samadhi. One kind of samadhi, Prabhupada says in the third canto, is lifeless yoga. That's the mechanical samadhi of the dhyan yogis, where there's a way to go mechanically into samadhi just by putting your body in different postures, breathing in a certain way. I mean, generally, they also require a pure life, but practically speaking, honestly, Prabhupada talks about this also in the teachings of Lord Kapila, even a materialistic person, even a demon, can go into samadhi like that. What big demon went into samadhi mechanically? Hiranyakashipu, who we're going to be reading about his disappearance day in a couple days. So Hiranyakashipu went into a mechanical samadhi. And in samadhi, before samadhi, there's pratyatara. You lose consciousness of your surroundings. So anyone can learn how to do this, actually. Prabhupada gives example in teachings of Lord Kapila of Stalin, who put his mind in such a state that he had surgical operation without anesthesia. So anyone can learn, practically half an hour, you could teach anybody how to do this. It's not terribly difficult. But Prabhupada calls this lifeless yoga. And that kind of samadhi, if something else comes along, Vishwamitra Muni had this problem. He was in that kind of samadhi, and he just heard some sound that he thought, oh, is that a woman's jewelry? And he was completely disturbed. Just the sound like that. Or Subhara Muni, who got disturbed by fish mating when he was in. Doesn't sound particularly disturbing. But anyway, he became disturbed, even though he was in this mechanical samadhi. So just some little thing, some jewelry clanking sound, some fish mating, and your mechanical samadhi is finished. So the samadhi that we're supposed to enter into is the kind of natural samadhi that we all enter to whenever we're very attached to something. Prabhupada talking on Bhagavad Gita 7.1, Maya Shakta Manaparta in Sanan, India, to a general crowd of the general populace, he was not talking just to devotees, said everybody already knows how to be attached. Everybody here know how to be attached? Anybody here need a lesson in how to be attached? No? No? Okay. We don't have any. If we had a class, how to become attached, would anybody have to go? No. So just you change the object of your attachment. And we all know how to be so attached that we forget about everything else, correct? Have we all had this experience? And we can get attached to anything. Have you also experienced this? You can get attached to anything. You can get attached to your phone so you forget everything else. To your shoes. To a dog. Anything. So that the whole rest of the world goes away. And you're completely focused. You don't even know where you are or what somebody's saying to you. Yes? So we all know how to do this. This is not some sort of new art. And this is a natural samadhi. This is a samadhi of attachment, a shakti, maya shakta manaparta. So one should learn to become attached to the Bhagavatam like that. And since it's katamritam, since it's amrita, surely that is possible. So that's with rapt attention. Now, how does one get this rapt attention? This is also from 1.3.44. Prabhupada says, no one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who's not pure in action. No one can be pure in action who's not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. So we can have rapt attention on a dog, or we can have rapt attention on a phone. But if you're going to have rapt attention on God or on the Bhagavatam, why would one need to have purity of mind. Because, yeah, otherwise the material attachments will intervene. What's Bhagavatam doing to you again? Remember? What is Bhagavatam doing? It's cleansing all of the... That's also in today's verse. Punantite vishaya vidushita swayam. It's cleansing all the vishaya. It's cleansing the desire to enjoy. But guess what? If you don't want to cleanse the desire to enjoy, then you can't pay attention to it. Does that make sense to everybody? You just won't. We talked about we get wrapped in something we want and something we need. But if you don't want to be cleansed, Prabhupada says if you want to keep things as they are, then why should you pay attention to a cleansing process? Is that logical? In fact, you won't pay attention to the cleansing process. You'll do it mechanically. You'll do it with distraction. You'll do it with inattention. Therefore, satam, one has to be truthful. And how does one become pure in mind? Prabhupada says one has to become pure in action. So you can't say, well, I really want to love God. I really want to be a servant of God, but I'm going to spend all of my time doing materially exploitive activities. Who would believe that? Maybe a jury would believe. But would we believe that in our everyday life? If someone says, I really like you, I really want to spend time with you, and every time there's an opportunity, they're busy with something else. Have you ever had a friend like this? And after a while, you don't believe them. You know? After a while, you don't believe them. Or the man who tells his wife, oh dear, I love you so much. And then he's working, you know, 80, 90 hours a week and never sees her. And then she finds out he's got a girlfriend on the side and so forth and so on. And she says, how is it you love me? Where's the demonstration? Love is practical. Huh? What we care about is what we actually care about. I hope I can get this right. There was some research done about business leaders, and they were asked to write down their lists of priorities. What were the most important things they had to attend to in their business? So they wrote down this list of priorities. And then the researcher asked them to keep a record of what they worked on during a week. And at the end of the week, they compared the list of what the business leaders did and their list of priorities, and not one of the leaders spent 1 minute during the week working on anything on their priority list. Now, when I was doing research on financial management of school districts, so one of the things the financial managers told me over and over again is, you know the real priorities by looking at the budget. Whatever the leaders of the school system say, we really care about the arts, and then you look at their budget and see if they spend any money on it. Hey, if you want to know really if somebody says, I really want to love Krishna, and then you look at, well, what do they do? You can see what we, you know, where do we put our energy? Where do we put our money? Where do we put our energy? Like Jesus said, wherever your treasure is, there your heart is. Prabhupada quoted that to Ambarish when he asked him to buy the Detroit temple. He said, wherever your treasure is, there your heart is. Or Prabhupada talks about the wealthy man who retires and goes to Vrindavan with his beads and gives all of his money to his family. And Krishna says, where's your money? So to be pure in mind, one has to be pure in action. One has to demonstrate by one's actions what is actually important. And then Prabhupada says, no one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. So to be pure in our general action, we have to be, it's pretty easy to see how to be pure in eating. That we can figure out. Pretty easy to see how to be pure in mating. How do you be pure in sleeping? Oh, that's nice. Sleep knowing that tomorrow you wake up to serve Krishna. Any other thoughts about how to be pure in sleeping? Read before you sleep. Okay. Krishna book. All right. Have nice dreams. Okay. Any other thoughts about how to be pure in sleeping? Don't oversleep. Okay. Any other thoughts? Do not sleep. I don't think so, Prabhu. Regular sleep, sleep at regulated times. Yes? Sleeping at the right time, waking up at the right time. What about this pure in fearing? We could have a whole class on this one. Or maybe a week on this one. Yeah. To be afraid of the material energy. Oh, that was what purified Devaki. By being afraid of the material energy in the form of Kamsa, she was able to conquer the six enemies. Yes. Fear offenses to devotees. Oh, I like this. Yes. Protecting the weak. Oh, that's cool. Somebody else, how to be pure in fearing. Fear of falling down. What should we not be afraid of? No, we should be afraid of Maya. What should we not be afraid of? Death. Death? Okay. What else? Not be afraid of Krishna. Oh, thank you, Prabhu. To never have a fear that, oh, Krishna won't protect me. To have a confidence that Krishna will always protect me and maintain me. So pure in fearing would also mean I don't have to protect myself. I don't have to defend myself. You have any idea how much energy we spend in defending ourselves and attacking others? 8%. Probably something like that. Thank you for the scientific number. You can try a little experiment. Try an experiment. This is a codicil, so it'd be a good day to do it. You could say, for the rest of this whole day, I will not say anything to defend myself to anybody. And I will not say anything to criticize others. I will not say anything to defend myself, and I will not say anything to criticize others, unless there's some danger to somebody else. So sometimes you may have to defend yourself in order to save somebody else. And sometimes you may have to attack someone to save somebody else. And try it. You might find some interesting things happen. Okay. Then, for those of us who read this and go, I was all prepared to have rapt attention, but I don't have a pure mind, and I don't have pure action, and I'm not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating, so just forget the whole thing. Then Prabhupada says, but somehow or other, don't you love it when Prabhupada says that? But somehow or other, if someone hears with rapt attention from the right person at the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Sri Krishna in person in the pages of the Bhagavatam. So, even if your life is a mess, if somehow or other you hear from the right person, a.k.a. Srila Prabhupada, Sukadeva Goswami, and somehow, even for a moment, you have rapt attention. Bhagavatam says, one moment of pure consciousness. So that's our next thing. So we have rapt attention, purity in mind and body, and the next one is to hear from realized persons, as we just read. Then one can directly see the presence of Lord Sri Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam if one has heard it from a self-realized great soul like Sukadeva Goswami. So just hearing this morning, the Prabhupada says, if you hear from people who are making a profession, then neither the speaker nor the listeners gets benefited. He said, Krishna will not do business with you. He's not interested in doing business. He's a supreme controller. He doesn't need to do business. You know, I need things, so I have to do business with people. But Krishna doesn't need anything. Om Purnamada Purnamidam. He's complete. He has no requirement of doing business. He has nothing to exchange like that. Actually, it's disgusting when people pretend to be friends and then are doing business, isn't it? It's just revolting. When someone makes I like you, I'm your friend, and actually they're coming to get something from you. Especially wealthy or famous people or very beautiful people, anyone who's very opulent is subject to this sort of thing, particularly. That somebody appears as a friend and actually they're just coming to get something. So if one hears Bhagavatam from such a person, there's no effect for anyone. So we should be careful with this principle And this probably doesn't particularly apply to Bhagavatam at this point in our history, but this applies to what books we read, what translations we read. So this was something I see becoming an increasing problem in our Hare Krishna movement. In the early days of ISKCON, it was really simple. We only read Prabhupada's books. We didn't read anything else. And now, fortunately, we have so many other books of the Acharyas that are being translated, and so many of Prabhupada's followers are also writing books, which Srila Prabhupada wanted them to do. But now our need for care is a little bit more subtle. I mean, before it was simple. You didn't really have to have much discrimination. Is it Prabhupada's book or not? Okay, simple. But now you have to have a little discrimination. What book is it? Where's the book from? Who translated it? Who commented on it? Is it proper for me at this stage in my devotion to read this book, and so forth and so on? And one should be careful. And I see that there's often a lack of care. You know, one of the reasons that we've been very interested in producing children's books is that we saw so many times where parents and teachers would get their kids these comics. You know, and I remember looking one of these comics right in the front. It was talking about how Indra was the Supreme Lord. You know, the whole mood is off. And so you may say, oh, it's Krishna's Leela and so forth, but it's not going to give you that effect. All right, so we have with rapt attention, with purity in body and mind from the right person, and then in the association of devotees. Satam prasanga mama virya sambandha. Again, the word satam. Prasanga, not just sangha, but prasanga. Not just like hanging out, although hanging out with devotees is also nice, but deep association. And Prabhupada says in 2230 that one should hear and read Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. So personal study is nice. Certainly we're not saying you should never personally study the Bhagavatam. It's not that every time you open the book you have to invite some other devotee into your room. But we should also study in the association of devotees. And it's Machchita Magata Pranambodhyatam Prasparam Katayantaschamam Nityan Tushanti Charamanticha. It's so satisfying, isn't it, when there's that Prasparam. Just like even I've asked you questions and you've come up with answers that I wouldn't have thought of. It's enlivening. We all have so much to offer each other. And when we're in the association of devotees, we get the right understanding. So there's a nice quote here from 4.9.11. Prabhupada says, if one gets an unripe mango, it is still a mango. And when it is ripe, it remains the same mango, but it has become more tasteful and relishable. Similarly, there is devotional service performed according to the direction of the spiritual master and the injunctions and regulated principles of Shastra, and there is devotional service in the spiritual world, rendered directly in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they are both the same. There is no change. The difference is that one stage is unripe and the other is ripe and more relishable. So would everybody like to get their devotional service ripe? All right. It is possible to mature in devotional service only in the association of devotees. So this is something that Srila Prabhupada emphasizes over and over again, that someone who thinks that they can mature without the association of devotees, Prabhupada says, is in a great hallucination, because it's not possible. Without devotees, it's very easy to become deviated. Of course, sometimes... Anyway, maybe we won't go there. Not today. All right. So another thing is that understanding in context. So this is so important. It's so easy to pull out one sentence, one word, one something from the Shastra. The Christians call it devil citing Shastra. And Prabhupada would also say that. The devil can quote the scripture for their own purposes. I mean, seriously, I met one gentleman who said, my favorite verse in Bhagavad Gita is where Krishna says, now you can do whatever you like. But I mean, you could take that from the Bhagavad Gita and say, there's Krishna's directions. Do whatever you like. Or Krishna's instructions to Nanda Maharaj in the Bhagavatam, where he says, why are you worrying about God? God has to give you the results of your karma. Just be a good person. What about even where Krishna says to Arjuna, for those who've been honored, dishonor is worse than death? Yeah, we get that honor. A little later, he says, you should be detached from honor and dishonor, but you just take the one thing. So this has also become a very common problem in our Hare Krishna movements. I have my point I want to make, and I selectively pull out the quotes that foster my point, and I throw those quotes at you, and you have your point you want to make, and you selectively pull out the quotes that support your point, and you throw them back at me, and et cetera, et cetera. So at best, this is Kanista Adhikari, where Prabhupada describes that the Kanista is always arguing that their form of devotion is better than anybody else's. And at worst, it's half a hen and you get nothing. You know the story of half a hen, where the guy wanted the eggs and didn't want to feed the hen, so he just cuts it in half and thinks he's going to get the eggs. So one should understand the Shastra in context. In order to do that, my dear friends, one has to know the whole Shastra. How are you going to understand the Shastra in context if you don't know the context? So if you haven't thoroughly read Srila Prabhupada's books, if you haven't thoroughly read the Bhagavad Gita, you know, if you're still on 111, then how are you going to understand things in context? So you want to know in the context of the whole scriptures. All right, is this statement in the Shastra, is this a statement that's true for everybody all the time in all time, places, and circumstance? Or is this a statement that has to be applied according to time, place, and circumstance? Like, what's a statement that is true in all time, places, and circumstances? Sarva Dharma and Parichaja. Do you know that Mahaprabhu told Ramananda Roy that that was external? Sorry. But it was a good try. Dehi no smenyata dehe. Oh, it's only true in the material world. Another good try. Krishna's true Bhagavan Swayam. Okay, that's a good one. That's true in all times, in all places, in all circumstances. Another one. Always remember Krishna and never forget him. That's true for everybody in all time, in all place, in all circumstances. Jivera Swarupaya Krishnara Nityadas. Very nice. Okay, give me some statement that is applicable to some people in some times and some circumstances. Just do your duty. Yes, okay. The gopis gave up their duty, didn't they? They did. Yes. If you can't do bhakti yoga, do karma. Oh, yeah, very good. Okay. So we have many examples like that. Now, how are you going to know which examples are applicable to certain people in certain circumstances and which they're absolutely true, but they're absolutely true in certain circumstances? Does that make sense to everybody? And which statements are absolutely true in all circumstances for everybody? And there are different statements. And how are you going to know that? You have to know the context. The context means you have to know the whole Shastra. You have to know what is the Siddhanta. And then you have to know the context in which it's spoken. Who's speaking it? To whom? What's happening? Yes? One has to know the story. What's the purpose? What's going on? Otherwise, we'll be misled. Otherwise, we'll take something that's meant to be applied in certain senses and apply it in all circumstances, or apply it in the wrong circumstances. And we'll take something that should be applied in all circumstances and think it should only be applied in some circumstances. And then also, of course, we have Nasta Parayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Seveya Bhagavata Uttama Sloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki. Nityam Bhagavata. One should be hearing repeatedly, not just once and then you finished. So I've already run out of time, so I'm going to have to do really quickly. Right. Next is systematically. So Prabhupada says in the preface, the only qualification one needs to study this great book is to proceed step by step cautiously and not jump forward haphazardly like an ordinary book. It should be gone through chapter by chapter, one after another. The reading matter is so arranged with its original Sanskrit text, its English transliteration, synonyms, translations, and purports, so that one is sure to become a God-realized soul at the end of finishing the first 9 cantos. So I don't know if I've said this here before or not, but I asked Burjan Prabhu in Vrindavan, because he and Narayani have taught the Bhagavatam from first canto to 12th canto, not even just first to ninth, verse by verse, systematically. And I said, so Prabhu, we were having prasadam, I said, so Prabhu, did you become a self-realized soul? And he said, oh yes. He said, I have realized that I am a fool. One should read Bhagavatam with a view to application in your life, not just as something theoretical. I remember years ago in a Sankirtan newsletter, one sannyasi said, whenever one is reading the Shastra or listening to a class, one should always think, how can I apply this to my own life? So after reading that, I became very enthused, and I said, yes, I'm going to do that. So the next morning, I went to Bhagavatam class that was given by the temple commander, and his whole class was about that the way to advance was to surrender to your local and immediate authority. So I was really having problems having rapt attention in the class. And at one point I thought, because at that time I was in the Grihastha Ashram and we had our own flat a couple blocks from the temple, and I was thinking, what does this have to do with me? I don't have any immediate authority in the temple. And I thought, okay, well, that Maharaj said you should really try to apply it to your own life. I said, oh, Krishna, please show me how to apply this somehow to my own life. And all of a sudden I went, oh, my husband is my immediate authority. And that transformed my life. It had a huge transformative effect on my life. If I just thought, oh, my husband's my temple president, it made things very simple for me. Anyway, it was a big thing. So I found even in a class that was, I'm sorry, I have to say, not a very nice class. And I'm sorry to say that it wasn't a very nice class. I'm going to be honest. Sometimes one has to be honest. And it wasn't given with a view to help everybody who was listening. Still, I was able to find something for personal application. So I found that to be the case. And we're going to get to that with teaching also. And then with the desire to increase one's attachment to Krishna, one should be reading, how can I become more attached to Krishna? 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 Not just reading officially, but reading and studying and hearing, how can I use this? How can I use this today? And how can I use this today to become more attached to Krishna? Then how to teach the Shastra. So, of course, one also has to have a pure life to teach the Shastra. One can't be going to the nightclubs and the casinos and the brothels and then, you know, teaching the Shastra and then going to smoke your cigarette afterwards. That's not going to work. One has to be a transparent via media. One has to be connecting, as Prabhupada said, soul to soul via the super soul. One should be connecting Krishna to the hearers. And one should be in disciplic succession. One shouldn't just say, well, I've gone to the desert and meditated and seen God, and now I'm starting my own religion. One should be teaching the Bhagavatam as it's taught by the predecessors. Prabhupada's emphasizing this so much. Right? He says, everyone should be a guru. What is the qualification? Just repeat what you have heard. Just don't concoct anything. And just as the hearers should find principles for life application, the preachers should preach for life application. Don't teach the Bhagavatam up in some sort of theoretical cloud where people just say, oh, that's very nice, but what am I supposed to do with it? And please don't make people work to find an application. Give it to them. That's the job of the teacher. The job of the teacher is to bring the truth of the Shastra to the lives of the people. Make it relevant to them. Prabhupada was so expert at that. Made Bhagavatam relevant in every purport, in every class. Narada Muni was also expert at this. How to take universal truths and make them applicable to the audience's lives right now. That means preaching according to time, place, and circumstance. That means changing your presentation according to the audience. That means giving people ways they can apply things right now. In 1.5.16, Prabhupada says, the expert devotees also can discover novel ways and means to convert the non-devotees in terms of particular time and circumstance. Devotional service is dynamic activity, and the expert devotee can find out competent means to inject it into the dull brains of materialistic person. And in Adi 738 purport, he says, Desh Kalapatra should be taken into consideration. Therefore, it is a principle that a preacher must strictly follow the rules and regulations laid down in the Shastras, yet at the same time, devise a means by which the preaching work will reclaim the fallen may go on with full force. So both are required to keep the message pure and to present it according to time, place, and circumstance and personal application. One has to do both. If you say, well, I've kept the message pure, that's not enough. You have to keep the message pure and make it real for people. It's like if you cook and you cook with only ghee and you cook with only organic devotee-grown vegetables, but you just throw the food at people. You know, you want to serve the prasadam on a nice plate with respect, yes? Does that make sense? You know, just like say, well, it's pure prasadam, Prabhu, and just dump it on their lap. So not only that it has to be presented purely, but in a way that people can accept it and people can digest it. And the last thing I'll look at is preaching should be in context also. That is also the preacher's responsibility to make sure they don't take sentences or statements out of context to throw it at people just to support their own agenda. So we should hear and study in context, and we should preach in context. Actually, if one has one's own agenda, one has no business preaching. The only agenda we should have is the agenda of Krishna and the agenda of Guru. And therefore, we'll be willing to present the Shastras fairly in context, even if it makes us look like a fool, or even if it doesn't support a position that we want to have. So, again, for hearing with rapt attention, with purity in body and mind from realized persons in the association of devotees, understanding in context, repeated hearing, systematic, with a view to application and a view to attachment. And teaching, also with purity in life, in disciplic succession, making it relevant to people in their own life, to their time, place, and circumstance, and honestly in context. So I'm sorry I went a few minutes over. We'll blame that on the long kirtan. Questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions?